afternoon, Joe, on a rainy afternoon. It's Pat Moore, your host today for the Juneau afternoon. It's just exactly 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We have a wonderful program lined up. Some wonderful guests are in town. The DeRosier Family Band is here. They're going to be doing a concert Friday and Saturday night. We'll talk to those folks. Trevor Kirshoff is opening up a new business called Get Growing. He's got some supplies and materials for indoor gardening, so he'll come on and talk to us about that. The Stevens Puppets will be doing performances on Tuesday at the library. T Harbor Fire Department's having a big garage sale on Saturday, so Captain Ken and Judy Neary will drop by and tell us about that. And we'll learn about the activities surrounding Sunday's National Cancer Survivors Day with Nicole Hollingstad, the president of Cancer Connection. Stay tuned for all of that on Juneau Afternoon. Time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Aboriginal population in the Canadian province of Manitoba continues to grow, and with that comes new challenges. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, some high-powered business leaders say the state of First Nations should not be ignored.
A recent survey from Statistics Canada found that nearly 17% of Manitoba's population identifies itself as Aboriginal. That's about four times the national average of 4.3%. But even that survey may be misleading, and the numbers may be much higher because First Nations people are among those who are less likely to take part in any surveys. Laurie Wilkinson teaches sociology at the University of Manitoba.
There's still an incredible amount of racism and inequality that Aboriginal peoples face that prevent a lot of people who have Aboriginal identity from self-identifying, because it's still a problem in our society. There are many people in our society that look down on you because you're Aboriginal.
At a recent conference in Winnipeg about the future of Manitoba, poverty and education were among the main items on the agenda, and those topics always include First Nations. Some business leaders say any talk about the future must also address those issues and how they affect Native people, and to ignore the problems is a threat to the quality of life. Mark Chipman is one of the owners of the National Hockey League's Winnipeg Jets. Chipman says it's time everyone became involved in what's happening to First Nations communities.
I know for some it's an awkward or challenging subject to talk about, but it's reality.
There was no conclusion about where the solutions might lay, but many Native and business leaders agreed that Canada's governments are not doing enough to address the social problems facing First Nations. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Residents of the interior Alaska village of Galena, who did not evacuate as a major flood inundated the village, are seeing the community slowly emerge from the Yukon River. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Most of Galena's 300-plus residents were flown out as an ice jam on the Yukon River sent water through the village this week, but about 70 locals stayed behind with a small team of government responders. They waited out the flood in a diked area around the village airport. The ice jam broke up Wednesday night, and the river level is slowly dropping, leaving behind large ice blocks and a big mess. Galena resident Larry Holtcheese is one of many left homeless.
A lot of houses are off their foundation that floated around, and including my house, it's totaled. Majority of the people got no more homes to go back to.
Holtcheese says his father tells him that this week's flood compares to a big one that hit the village back in 1945.
It went from the hills south of Galena to the hills north of Galena, and that's exactly what happened this year.
Most of Galena's residents are staying in Fairbanks. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
The National Park Service is asking climbers who visit an area considered sacred to tribes to voluntarily stop activities there starting Saturday. As Christine Trudeau reports, the request has been made on behalf of tribes that will be holding ceremonies.
Devil's Tower, located in northeastern Wyoming, is possibly best known for its appearance in the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and has been an ideal place to climbers since the late 19th century. Voluntary closures of climbing routes took effect in 1996 for more than two dozen tribes who use the area. Nancy Stimson is Chief of Interpretation and Education for the National Park Service at Devil's Tower.
We, the National Park Service, are asking the climber to not climb during the month of June out of respect for the Native American tribes.
Since the implementation of the voluntary closure, the tower has seen an 85% reduction in climbers during that active summer month. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
15 Cherokee Nation students are participating in this year's Remember the Removal bike ride. For 3 weeks, they'll journey from Georgia to Oklahoma. The event was created for youth to commemorate the Trail of Tears. Thousands of Cherokee people died of exposure, starvation, and disease during the forced removal to Indian Territory in the 1800s. During this month in 2011, Tiffany Smalley was awarded an undergraduate degree from Harvard University, and with it came the distinction of being the first Wampanoag student to graduate from Harvard in more than three centuries. Her predecessor earned a degree in 1665. Smalley also accepted a degree for another Wampanoag student who died before graduation. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Just about 6 minutes after three, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting this afternoon for Juneau Afternoon. My first guests are here from out of town. As a matter of fact, they've been out of their town since sometime in January. With us today are the DeRocher family band members. Paul DeRocher is the father of this family group, and Jesse DeRocher is here with him. And I guess there are, nine other DeRochers in town?
So, that's correct.
Boy, when you book a motel, you really take it over, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and also Paul Zahasky is here as sort of their, chauffeur, tour guide, and local rep, right?
Gracious host.
That's right. Yeah, gracious host. I knew there was a title for that. Anyway, yes. So you're doing two concerts, one at Glacier View Church of God tonight at 7 o'clock.
That's correct.
And then another one at Chapel by the Lake at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, right?
Yes. Yep.
At the end of our interview, we're going to plug in a little of their music so you can get a kind of a taste of what there is to hear at this concert. So can you briefly describe what you all do when you do a concert?
Sure. We do about an hour and a half concert, usually on our Saturday nights. We'll do about an hour set, about a 15-minute intermission, and then come back with a closing set. We do quite a variety of music. Our bass genre was probably bluegrass when we started out. And, of course, you know, as you musically progress, branch out into some different genres. But we have some different themes that we like to bring out, some originals. Some covers, and of course we're sharing our life story. Folk music is kind of like that, talking about things that are, you know, that make life go by, and that's interesting. So, of course, we have the big family theme too, so family is a large part of what we do and what we want to encourage people in. That's kind of the overview.
So, just this band that you play in is all your brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, I guess with one exception now. You've lost an older sister to marriage.
Yeah. She got married about 8 or 9 months ago. And so my older sister, Gabe, she's 15. She just kind of stepped in and just started playing. And
she's playing upright bass.
Upright bass. So, okay. It's been a lot of fun, and we really enjoy it.
And you're the fiddler and the lead vocal, right?
Yeah, on the male side, yeah. And then I have a sister who sings a lot of, she's more of our lead vocalist than I am, because a lot of our songs are lead female singers.
Okay, and then you guys have got a harmony, our harmony singers all over in order to make the thing work, right?
Right.
So did you train them?
I wish I could take credit for all that, but no, I didn't. I'm kind of the weak link. I'm the bus driver and scheduler and manager and bang out a few chords and enjoy making a joyful noise. But they've pretty much, learned on their own, taken some lessons. They were classically trained, when your kids are little, you put them in piano, and then they took interest in strings and began playing in the stringed orchestra, played in the adult symphony orchestra in our town. Our older kids who are married and out of the home, began playing competitive piano and played cello and violin in the orchestra as well. And then we stumbled into this thing called bluegrass music, entered some fiddle contests. Jesse started entering some fiddle contests. He was about 12 years old. And, of course, I brushed the dust off of my guitar from my old Kumbaya days and youth group, 20 years ago or 40 years ago now, whatever. But So one thing led to the next, and we added a bass and a dobro and a banjo, and before you know it, we were kind of having fun together.
Not every large family turns into a band. So what was, how did this come about? Why did you decide that you all wanted to get into a camper and drive around the country 9 months out of the year playing music in various places and entertaining people?
You know, it's an interesting development. The way it initially happened is, we live in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and at our church we had a Southern Gospel group that was coming in to play. play for our annual Father's Day fish fry. Big event, and something happened, their bus broke down or somebody took ill or whatever, and the deacons came and said, hey guys, we're our backs against the wall, can you guys play some music for us? And we had never really officially kind of played or done anything, and so
it had just been like a family thing to do.
Yeah, we'd play in nursing homes and kind of just go here and there and just kind of kicking it around, and you know, we'd sing at the dinner table, you know, quite frequently, just sing hymns out of the hymnal and sing harmonies and parts and whatnot. And then, you know, I'm a pastor by trade, and so we had the monthly service in the nursing home once a month. And so we'd go there, and the little kids would visit with people, and we'd play some music. And this is when the kids were real small. So they said, hey, can you guys play something? And we put together about 8 songs. We were like, hey, that was really fun, you know. And people smiled and clapped and enjoyed it. And we put it back in the back shelf. And sure enough, came around Thanksgiving time, somebody else said, hey, can you come play for our Thanksgiving banquet? We heard you guys did a good job over here. And next thing you know, we got a few invites like that to play. And we thought, hey, this would be fun. So we put together what we called our Toe in the Water Tour. Let's see if we like it. And we called some churches in New England and Connecticut and Massachusetts and out that way and New York and went out that way and played a circuit of, 15 concerts. And people clapped. They smiled. They had a good time. And that was the start of it all.
That was the road.
That was the beginning.
We did, too.
Yeah, we liked it, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful. I'm getting this great feeling of a family that really knows how to put something together. That's really a great image.
It's a lot of work, you know, but everyone is committed to it. Everyone's enjoying it, and that's kind of, you know, part of the balance of, you know, putting your best foot forward and doing a good job and being professional, and yet at the same time having fun and not ruining the fun of it, you know, because if it doesn't have that sort of organic kind of fun to it, I mean, let's face it, it can get old being on the road. And we decided we're going to play music that we like, and we've continued to sharpen our skills and put out more CDs and better quality, and so we've branched out into recording and some other things, and it's just been a lot of fun, as well as a neat opportunity to meet people and to encourage people and their families and that kind of thing.
Paul, how'd you find these folks?
Well, our family is a musical group, too, and we tour about 5 months out of the year, and we were down. The first time we met was in the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas.
Okay.
And I think there was 12 or 13 family groups down there doing the same thing. And we met the Droshers, went and saw one of their shows, and they came to one of ours, and we went to a picnic. And we were just really taken with them on many different levels. You know, musically, they were just stunning, beautiful arrangement, good, solid band. And as a family, we really connected with them as friends. And so we've kept in touch. We've bumped into each other, you know, multiple times before, and our families have become good friends and close. And this last year we said, hey, you're going to be on the West Coast. Why don't you just keep going north while you're there and see if we can help maybe, you know, get you at least to Juneau and line you up with some engagements. And lo and behold, they're here. So we're stoked. They're here for a week. We have 11 extra people in our house, and we're loving it.
So you didn't bring the camper up?
We did not bring the camper.
Okay, all right. So and what did you do? Call the neighbors and say we need 11 beds?
They're pretty good at flopping anywhere.
You're sleeping on the floor somewhere? Is that?
I'm sleeping on a mattress. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So.
I slept in worse places.
Right?
Yeah. No, this is great.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, we should close this out by listening to a little of your sound, and we want to absolutely stress that these concerts, they're no cost, right?
Correct.
Right, and so this is Friday night, tonight, at 7 o'clock at Glacier View Church of God, and then Saturday night, 7 o'clock at the Chapel on the Lake. So catch the DeRocher Family Band while they're here. Here's what they sound like, folks. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
The truth in your eyes, saying you'll never leave.
17 minutes after 3 o'clock. Music by the DeRocher Family Band. They're here in town to do at least two concerts. 7 p.m. tonight at Glacier View Church of God. Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Chapel by the Lake. So take it in, folks. Paul DeRocher was just here a moment ago, along with Jesse and local musician Paul Zahasky. Brought them into town, and they sound pretty good to me. My next guest is here to tell us about a kind of a new business for town. I haven't heard of anyone selling these exact things that he's featuring here. Trevor Kirchhoff is here, and Trevor, I understand that you've brought in a line of components for indoor gardening.
Yeah.
So what's the what do we need in order to make our indoor gardens grow?
Well, I've got all the supplies like lights and nutrients and stuff, systems that you need, to set up for indoor gardening. And then I'm also trying to carry a bunch of high-end organic fertilizers for like people who are trying to push their outdoor gardens as well.
Okay, and so where are you bringing in organic fertilizers from?
I'm just ordering from a few different suppliers from down south. Sunlight Supply and BWGS are a few, and then I have a Vortex Brewer from Progress Earth. So they have a lot of organic nutrients and supplements as well.
And are you an indoor gardener yourself?
Yes.
Is that where the expertise for this business came from?
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, it's at least where the interest came from. I've got an indoor garden even set up at the store now, an aquaponics garden with fish and worms.
Oh, okay. A closed system.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. And then growing some heirloom tomatoes there. Should be producing fruit hopefully in a couple months.
Let me know when.
Yeah, exactly. And the nice thing about the heirloom seeds is that any of the fruit that comes, all the seeds will be true.
Uh-huh.
And they're actually Alaskan fancy tomatoes, so they'd be good for anyone, greenhouse gardening or anything out here.
Well, are you growing the Sweet 100s that are developed up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks?
Actually, no. I ordered these from a company down south that specializes in heirloom tomato varieties, and they have, I don't know, over 600 varieties, but I'm going to go through and run about 7 or 8 of them one at a time, so it'll take a couple years, but I'll get through them.
So where'd you come to us from?
Actually, this is my hometown.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
I was born here. I went to school down south in Nevada, and moved back a few years ago.
Uh-huh. And was this something that came up while you were in college, or when did you get your interest in indoor gardening?
When I was down in Reno, it was nice because you could actually do it in your front yard with the sun rather than...
What is that? Could you explain?
I know, right? Rather than up here with the lights and stuff like that, definitely adds to the cost, but especially with it being so dark, it's kind of nice. I mean, you don't need to invest in a sad light. You already have that right there.
So, two uses for the satellite.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Good enough. So, where will you be located?
I'm actually opened up now right across the street from the Alaskan Brewing Company out on Shane Drive.
Oh, okay. Out by Costco.
Mm, exactly,
that
yeah.
Okay, that unit. Okay, good. In one of those little the storage units that are right across
the street? Yeah, it's like pretty much a glorified garage.
Yeah.
Big bay door and
Yeah. There's an outboard shop in there and a couple of other.
Yep, I'm right next to Automotive Ingenuity.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. No, everybody can find it from that.
Yep.
Okay, good enough. So your line consists of seeds? It's eventually going to include seeds.
I will have some seeds eventually. Okay. Right now I'm carrying advanced nutrients. I have accounts with Sunlight Supply, and they have so many different lines that I could carry. But I'm kind of, as I'm just getting started up, building up my inventory, whatever people want, I'll certainly carry. But right now I just have four or five different main lines that I stock.
So let's go back now to the hydroponic. You had another term that you used.
Well, there's hydroponics, which is gardening without soil, based basically on like dissolved salts.
Okay, but you're talking about this closed system, and I'm really interested in that.
That's sort of my attempt for organic hydroponics. Those two things don't normally go too well together.
Right.
Mainly because the organics need a lot of biology that's hard to maintain in a hydroponic system. And so the aquaponics, the fish create basically like on demand, they're constantly supplying nutrients. And there's actually a worm farm that's above the fish tank that you can supply extra nutrients to.
That works as a
composting. Yeah, exactly. Because in my case, growing tomatoes, they're set up in a deep water culture bed, meaning that the roots are just just floating basically in 12 inches of water that's heavily aerated. It's hard to build up the nutrient levels with just the fish and the fish food alone, and so incorporating the worms, which is kind of a new idea, and a lot of people aren't really doing it, but we'll see how it goes.
What kind of fish?
Right now I just have goldfish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I know commonly tilapia are used, and then it's sort of a, you know, an added benefit because you can eat the
fish. You can eat the fish, yeah.
Yeah, and actually they grow from fry to fry, they say, in 8 months.
Yeah.
Or fry to frying pan.
Right.
But yeah, with the system just getting started, I didn't want to mail order a bunch of $2 tilapia fingerlings and, you know, have some catastrophic disaster.
Yeah. How big is the total unit the way you have it set up?
The deep water culture bed is 4 feet by 8 feet, and there's 27 tomatoes that are planted in it. It holds about 240 gallons of water. And then the fish tank itself is actually, I'm pretty sure it came up here with the Alaska Airlines de-icing fluid in it. Now it holds about 200 gallons and about 75 goldfish right now.
Oh, okay. Sounds like a great repurposing.
Yes.
So are you also composting other than the worms?
Well, I have a compost tea brewer.
Okay,
which is pretty cool.
It's I understand you're selling compost tea.
Yeah, and for anyone who's listening, feel free to bring in a gallon jug, and I'll let you try some for free.
Okay.
But the Vortex Brewer perpetually brews actively aerated compost tea, so all the microbiology that's present in a healthy organic garden, you add some food sources, basically some sugars and some kelp product, and the microbiology just feed off of itself. And then when you introduce it to your garden, those organisms live in the root zone, and they have a symbiotic relationship with your plant. So the results are quite good, even especially if you have houseplants that you want to take care of.
I think a modification of this system has been used in the Israeli desert. I think they're actually using a plow system that the Australians developed, that has a deal where it inserts the organic tea as you dig a single furrow under the ground, and then the seeds are planted in that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but it sounds like it would work. I know that in Hawaii, I have a friend, I don't know much about it, but they're involved in repurposing land that's been heavily fertilized and is no longer productive, and they're using microorganisms to try and bring that land back to productivity. So it's kind of a new thing that even the people who manufacture the brewer for the tea, you know, they even say they don't know exactly, you know, the species of organisms that are in the tea, and it can even change, you know, from day to day as they, all those organisms live out their life cycle together. But in no case is it going to be bad. It's just, it's just very, very complex.
Well, I think I wish you a great deal of luck with your venture. Located, the address is?
5434 Shane Drive.
5434 Shane Drive.
B3.
Is there a telephone number for you?
Yeah, it's 907-957-6785.
6785. Leo, Trevor DeRocher, Trevor Kirchhoff. It's the DeRocher family band talking and doing here. Okay, so Trevor Kirchhoff is running Get Growing. It's a brand new business specializing in supplies and equipment for indoor gardening. Thank you very much for telling us about this. It's good news to a lot of people who are into gardening in town.
Thank you.
Well, the reason for big hair is because we're going to be seeing big hair in Rumpelstiltskin at the library. And right here in the studio with me, I have, well, I guess Rumpelstiltskin are all here. So let's see. This is the Stevens Puppet Theater, named for a very famous puppeteer.
Absolutely. Yes. Martin Stevens.
Uh-huh.
He started our company in 1933, and Mr. Stevens was actually kind of the preeminent American puppeteer. He founded the Puppeteers of America, which is still our primary professional guild, and he is just very, very well known for people he taught, like Jim Henson and Bill Baird, as well as the shows he made. As a matter of fact, one of the puppets we have in town with us is one of his most famous marionettes, the original fly-apart puppet that other people have copied and became kind of the industry standard.
So two of the puppeteers are Zan and Dan, and that was Zan who was just speaking, and Dan is here as well.
Hello there.
And with him is Noli Rayner.
Yep.
And Noli, what's your you two are like the lead puppeteers of the show, right?
We are, and Mom and Dad.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, these are my parents. This is a high school graduation trip for me.
Oh, okay.
But I also did the restoration work on all the puppets
that are
here.
That's what I heard. You're a carver.
I've not tried my hand at carving yet,
okay.
But I have. I repainted all of the puppets and recostumed some of them.
So did you have to do, like, research in order to figure out how they were originally painted and costumed? Or did you just use your own imagination?
They're actually... they were just kind of sanded down a little bit, so the original paint was still there.
Oh, okay.
And the parts that weren't, I just kind of used my imagination to figure it out.
Dan, did she do a good job? Did she do a good job then?
Oh, they're brilliant. And, you know, I usually don't let anybody touch what I consider my puppets, you know.
Okay.
But we were under a time deadline, and I said, okay, guys, I need help. I have too much painting to do. So we started divvying out, delegating the work, and Noli's my best artist of all five of my kids. So she sat down with the puppets, and I did a lot of breathing down her neck, but she just restored them to all their glory. These puppets are 50 years old. This is their 50th anniversary tour, so there was a lot of work to be done.
Now, a good friend of mine just put on a one-person show here in town, and she had to do 17 characters.
Good heavens.
And I'm thinking there's like a relationship between that, because you have to do multiple characters in order to be able to put this show together, right?
That is correct,
all
yes.
All you folks are schizophrenic.
A little bit, yeah. Definitely.
Something that we say in our house is roses are red, violets are blue, I'm a schizophrenic, and so am I.
makes total sense. So how many people are you, Dan, in the course of a normal show?
Oh, two in this show. Only two in this show. Noli is two, and Zan is one.
You're just one person the whole time?
I am just one. I'm not actually a person. I'm a bear.
Yeah. Do you find that boring? Or
well, you're so high, except this particular bear has such a fascinating voice, such a character voice, that it was a lot of fun to do that one.
I think you should let us hear your
bear
voice.
Maybe we hear the bear.
I agree.
All right. So the bear says, "Oh, poo, I don't like that tree at all."
very nice.
Thank you.
And who are the two of you?
I do Rumpelstiltskin as well as the Miller.
Okay, so may we have Rumpelstiltskin, please?
Absolutely.
I'm not mad. You hear? I'm not mad.
Makes sense, yes. And the Miller?
We welcome you to Stiltskin. It's your first time here because you've never been to Stiltskin. It's a country that never was. But just because it never was, don't think it never was true, for the things that happen in Stiltskin are the things that happen to you.
All right, Noli.
Well, I do two puppets, but they're technically the same person. It's the Miller's daughter who then becomes the queen. I am the daughter, so simple and shy, with innocent heart and trusting eye, who knows that nobody can tell a lie, who lives in the land of Stiltskin.
You should take a look at her innocent eyes, folks. It's amazing here in the studio. And the queen.
Let's sing.
Oh, I don't know, guys.
All right, go ahead.
Do the lullaby.
Rock-a-bye, baby, here in my arms. Mother will keep you safe from alarms. Ever so precious, ever a treat. Your mother's wee angel, baby, my sweet.
Now, see, I have the rare opportunity here to see you and hear you do all this without the puppets. Otherwise, I wouldn't be looking at you at all. I have to tell you, folks, when they're doing this stuff, they smile, they laugh, and they have great expression on their faces. They are really these people when they're doing this whole thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, so now, the puppets that go with this, was this cast of puppets part of the Stevens cast as the Rumpelstiltskin?
It was.
In other words, you're reproducing that show that's been around for
50
years.
We are. Mr. Stevens carved this in 1964, and we have still all of the original puppets. We have the original scenery, but at some point it just gets too old, and in this case the scenery was actually shredding, so we folded it up respectfully and put it away for later, and we did complete reproductions of all of Steve's pictures, so we have new scenery, and we used a tour with the original Martin and Margie's voices doing the show. But we just re-recorded this in the studio, 2 weeks ago, in time to leave. Because the voices can get very dated, that 1960s sound, and even just the actual technology involved. So we have fresh new voices, and it sounds fantastic. So it's kind of a mixture of the original and the new.
How do we go about seeing this?
The Valley Branch Library out the mall at Mendenhall.
Mendenhall.
Mendenhall Mall.
Valley Mall, there you go.
Right.
Is on the 4th. At 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock, so there are two different times that you can see the show.
And it's free.
It is free,
all
provided
the
by the library.
All the programs at the library are free. Okay, 2 and 6 at the Mendenhall branch of the library. If you don't know where that is, it's in Mendenhall Mall, folks, right across the street from, right across the hall from about three little different food places.
Yes,
right
exactly.
There in one side of the mall. So easy to find. Signs all over the mall will guide you to the library and like that. The shows start at 2 and 6. In the past, when you all have come here, it's been SRO. I mean, so if you want to see this, you probably need to show up early because that
crowds.
Place will pack.
Yes.
And it's in that little community room in the back there.
Correct.
So I think there's room for maybe maybe you get 60, 70 people in there, it starts to get pretty hot and crowded. So yes. you want to come early and bring maybe a blanket to sit on
yes,
the floor.
Absolutely.
That's more fun. If you're up front, then you get to really get intimate with the puppet.
Absolutely.
You bet.
And I would also recommend them to come, not just children, but adults as well.
Yes.
Adults and children love these shows.
As with all of these programs, it's a wonderful thing to do with your family, and it's a way to catch these wonderful stories that exist in our culture that you can get them out of a book, but you'll never get them like this. It's
That's
amazing.
Right. We need to give a quick shout-out to the Rasmussen Foundation that through a grant helped fund our travel so that we are able to actually perform at 18 different libraries around the state, including really small communities that would normally not be able to afford to bring us in. Mm-hmm. So the Rasmussen has done a great favor for Alaska.
Well, absolutely wonderful. Welcome to Juneau. I'm glad we could get some traditional Juneau weather so you know that it's not sunny here every minute.
It's beautiful here.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. So thank you very much, Dan and Zan and Noli.
Thank
and
you
we look
much.
Forward to seeing you and your thank alternate you. Personas out at the library on Saturday. Let's see. Did I say Saturday? Yeah, 4th of June. I'm sorry. On the 4th of June at the Valley Library at 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock, two performances.
Perfect.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 31st of May, 2013. It's the birthday of Walt Whitman, born in West Hills, Long Island, New York, 1819. Worked as a typesetter in a print shop. He was a teacher, a journalist, newspaper editor. Worked as a carpenter, which was his father's trade. And he was living with his mother in Brooklyn when he read an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson, The Poet, which said, "The new United States needed a poet to capture its spirit," and the young Whitman decided he was that poet. He later said, "I was simmering, simmering, simmering. Emerson brought me to a boil." He began work on his collection, Leaves of Grass, writing an American epic celebrating the common man, did most of the typesetting for the book himself, made sure the edition would fit in a pocket, paid for the publication of 795 copies out of his own pocket. He was 37 years old. At the beginning, Whitman was criticized for being openly erotic. One reviewer called the book a mass of stupid filth. He kept expanding Leaves of Grass. 146 poems were added for the third edition. Thoreau did not care for his poetry, neither did Willa Cather. She referred to Whitman as that dirty old man. But Ralph Waldo Emerson praised him as the most extraordinary piece of wit and wisdom America has yet contributed. Walt Whitman left New York when his brother was wounded in the Civil War. He walked all the way to Virginia and to Washington, D.C. to serve as a volunteer hospital nurse. And though he was unconventional in his manners and his clothing, Whitman found work as a clerk in the Department of the Interior until one of the brass discovered that he was the man who had written Leaves of Grass, and he was fired. But a friend of Whitman's arranged for him to be transferred to the Attorney General's office, and the friend wrote a pamphlet entitled The Good Gray Poet, which praised Whitman's nobleness of character. And the pamphlet helped to change the average reader's perception of Walt Whitman. Instead of a bawdy nonconformist, he became the good gray poet, the wise old man. He spent the last 20 years of his life revising, expanding Leaves of Grass. The eighth and final edition came out in 1891. Whitman said it was at last complete after 33 years of hackling at it, all times and moods of my life, fair weather and foul, all parts of the land in peace and war, young and old. Here's a poem for today by Walt Whitman, Section 5 of Crossing Brooklyn Ferry. What is it then between us? What is the count of the scores or hundreds of years between us? Whatever it is, it avails not. Distance avails not, and place avails not. I too lived. Brooklyn of ample hills was mine. I too walked the streets of Manhattan Island and bathed in the waters around it. I too felt the curious, abrupt questionings stir within me. In the day, among crowds of people, sometimes they came upon me. In my walks home late at night, or as I lay in my bed, they came upon me. I, too, had been struck from the float forever held in solution. I, too, had received identity by my body. That I was, I knew, was of my body. And what I should be, I knew, I should be of my body. Section 5 of Crossing Brooklyn Ferry by Walt Whitman. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Support comes from Valley Medical Care, offering a team of physicians and nurse practitioners committed to healthy newborns, toddlers, teens, and adults in Southeast Alaska, and proud to support public radio.
It's just about 19 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guests are here to tell us about an extremely important event. The Tea Harbor Fire Department is holding a big garage sale. As I understand it, the proceeds of this are to buy a sort of special camera for the Tea Harbor Fire Department. Isn't that right?
That's right.
So with me here are Judy Neary and Captain Ken Lawrenson. So tell us about this camera first. What are you buying?
Well, it's called a thermal imaging camera, and it's a device that allows folks, firefighters, to see through the heat and the smoke, essentially zero visibility otherwise. And so when we go into a fire, into a burning structure, then we can see the heat from where the flames are. We can see the temperature differences that might be manifest when a person is still inside the building and needs to be rescued. It basically cuts through all of the zero visibility and allows us to do the job safer and faster and more efficiently. And one of the benefits of that is that it exposes the firefighters to less danger, but it also gives us a chance to try to minimize the amount of damage to a structure and the amount of water damage that we're going to bring to a structure when we're trying to control that fire.
Ken, one of them little Hummers ain't cheap, are they?
Oh, no. They're not.
They're not. Okay, so one big part of the fundraising is a garage sale that will be lasting all day Saturday, right? And Mary, I take it this is your organization that's hanging this together?
Well, it's not an organization. It's just the neighbors of the Tea Harbor area.
Okay.
And we just wanted to put on a garage sale to meet our neighbors, to grow the community, and to support our firefighters.
So everyone from the neighborhood out in Tea Harbor has cleaned out their garages, their houses, and the backyard, and they're all putting it out on tables and like that?
Only quality items.
Only quality items.
Right.
Okay. And this is going on in the firehouse because of the possibility of showers on Saturday.
That's correct. And it's also an open house for the Lynn Canal Fire Hall.
Oh, okay. So
that's right. We'll have the station open. We'll have the apparatus out for static display so that folks can take a look at the equipment that's out there to protect them. We'll be doing some fire prevention education and outreach as well, including a smokehouse, for the lack of a better word, where we can use a smoke generator to put some harmless banana oil smoke into a small mock-up of a house, and we can get kids in there and they can practice how to get out of a smoky environment in an emergency. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a wonderful event. Are you still looking for items for the garage sale, or is it just limited to folks who live in Tea Harbor?
Well, we're trying to limit the donations just because we don't want to end up with a lot of
200 black and white TV sets, right?
Right. Yeah. And then what do we do with it at the end?
Right.
So people who are donating will be staffing throughout the day, the 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock, time frame, and then they'll be taking their items back home if they do not sell.
If they don't sell.
And we have some great items.
Can you give us a kind of an idea?
Sure. We have a brand new refrigerator still in a box. We have Prius studded snow tires used for 3 months, and they're on wheels. We have a DeWalt 36-volt cordless tool, recumbent bike, bicycles, tents, saline equipment, brand new microwave. I have some zucchini plants, primroses, poppies. So just a whole slew of things.
Downriggers. This is not a garage sale. This is a high-end deal here.
Well, you know, we're quality people out there at Tea Harbor.
I'm liking this plan. Okay, so Tea Harbor. So people have to drive a ways out the road. What's the parking like? You're opening up a fairly good size. You got a good size parking lot.
Yeah, we
lot
have a good
there.
Size parking lot there. Yeah, so we're going to arrange everything so that there should be plenty of room for folks to park out there. And really, it's only 18 mile. That's really not that far right. In the big scheme of things.
And if there's a member of your family that really just hates to go to garage sales, he or she can go play with the fire engines while the
exactly
other person
right.
does the shopping. I think this is. I think you got a great combination.
In addition, we'll have hot dogs for sale, home baked desserts, and lemonade. So it's kind of during the lunch hour, so you have to eat sometime.
So, Mary, I'll be giving you a call in a couple of weeks. I want you to come organize my garage sale at the house. And
By the way, my name's Judy.
Oh, Judy. I'm sorry, Judy.
That's okay.
I beg your pardon. Okay, so the event begins at 10 o'clock on Sunday?
Saturday.
It's
tomorrow.
Yeah, Saturday. Okay, 10 o'clock Saturday. Boy, I'm making all kinds of mistakes today, aren't I? Okay, 10 o'clock Saturday. It's at the fire station, the farthest one out. You drive out toward out the road until you get
Lincoln
to the fire
Outlet,
station on the right.
At mile 18.
Mile 18. Okay, good enough. And wonderful items on the garage sale. I wish you very good luck with this. Hope you raise enough money to buy that camera. It sounds
Thank
like
you.
Something that would be a great piece of equipment for the fire station.
Thank you, Pat.
You bet. Thank you.
I love KTOO.
Yes,
all
right.
These
yes.
wonderfully entertaining things that I listen to while I paint.
That's Juno artist Constance Baltuck, who has generously donated her painting, Waterfall Salmon Creek, as a 40th anniversary fundraising gift for KTOO. We're offering a limited edition of 200 prints signed and numbered by the artist. All proceeds benefit KTOO. To learn more, visit kto.org/anniversary.
Support for this program comes from Southeast Rock Camp, where students learn to play in a band, write songs, and perform a rock concert. Camp starts June 10th for kids ages 6 to 17. Information at Alaska Music 1-789-0218.
It's just 13 minutes before 4 o'clock. We're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Nicole Hollingstad is here to tell us about a really important Cancer Survivors Day. This is the Sunday's national part of Cancer Survivors Day. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
So, being a cancer survivor myself, I'm all in favor of this kind of event, and I'm curious about what all will happen as part of Sunday's event.
Well, on Sunday, it's a very small window of time for a huge celebration of heart for our survivors. We start at 11 a.m., with folks gathering at Centennial Hall. We do take some photos before the group sets out. Then we do a small little walk through downtown with balloons and signs just to raise awareness and attention to the survivors in our group. And then we meet at Baranoff at 12 o'clock noon for our luncheon. And at our luncheon, we do recognize several folks in the community, and we have a series of awards that Cancer Connection gives. We usually wrap up a little bit after 1 o'clock, so for just a few hours of time, you leave with a great feeling in your heart. We hope folks are able to make it.
I'm hoping that everyone in the community knows what Cancer Connection is, but I want to make sure that they do, because when this disease strikes, all of a sudden you need support that you never dreamed that you were going to have. And Cancer Connection is the safety net for all of us here in Southeast Alaska.
Well, and support not only that you never dreamed about needing, but that you probably never knew where to look to find. So Cancer Connection, you know, I've got to put in a plug for the website. It's cancerconnectionak.org, is there as a nonprofit resource that keeps its funds local to Southeast Alaska and offers resources from information to a Let's Talk program where those who are recently diagnosed can meet with somebody who has had a similar path and ask the kind of questions that only somebody really who's had this experience can answer, to travel reimbursement assistance program and our newest addition to our suite of resources, yes, the apartment in Seattle,
yeah,
which has proven to be very helpful and a needed resource.
Yeah, the thing that I experienced is it really doesn't matter how good your insurance is. The insurance company can only go so far, and
right,
cancer is something that lasts longer than
right
that, and you run out of resources, not just money. You run out of the ability to get your wife down to be there with you when you're, going through the terrible parts of it and all that sort of stuff.
Well,
because
the hard part too is that
you use up the airline miles,
yeah,
and there ain't nothing left.
And when you're faced with the health challenge, the administrative side of everything is kind of one of the last things you even really want to have to think about. So having Cancer Connection, as a resource to help folks navigate through some of those needs, it's what we're there for. And being able to celebrate the fact that there are 14 million survivors of cancer in America on this single day, which is shared throughout the United States and a dozen or more countries as a National Cancer Survivors Day, is just a great opportunity to get together for that kind of reinforcement and that joy and celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we need to stress here, this is not just, this is a fundraiser as well, is it not?
Well, only insofar as people are kind enough to make a suggested donation for lunch. This really is the celebration itself. Cancer Connection does have other fundraisers throughout the year, such as the Beat the Odds race and our health forum. But today is really a day of celebration.
Okay, let's talk about those other events that happen throughout the year, because I'm sure there are some people who would like to lend support and like that. So what were the two that you named?
Our two largest fundraisers are Beat the Odds, Race Against Breast Cancer. And because I want to be accurate, I'm going to ask people to go to our website to find out for sure the date of that event. And we have a community health forum this fall. Again, please see our website. You're rapidly typing it in so we can make sure people have these dates. Those are our main fundraisers and community outreach. And, of course, in addition to National Cancer Survivors Day this Sunday, June 2nd, starting at 11 a.m., we strongly encourage folks to get involved in some of these events. And if you're new to the cancer community, if you are a survivor yourself, or you have a loved one, or you know of somebody who's been through this journey, it's a great community to be connected to, and we've got the resources available.
The Beat the Odds race and walk is on August 24th, and the other event
is the community health forum.
What month do you hold that?
October.
Okay.
I know right now my fellow board members are listening, thinking,
it's
just
not
shouting the date at the radio.
No, it's not on here on the events calendar yet, so you have a board meeting on the 7th and Cancer Survivor Support Group on the 15th.
Okay. Give
tell
me a
about
few seconds.
The,
we'll get
tell
it.
Me about the Survivor Support Group.
We do meet the third Tuesday of every month, and it's an opportunity for folks to just ask questions, find some communal fellowship with people who've had a similar experience, to be able to talk in a way that sometimes they can't with family or friends who don't deeply, truly understand the journey that survivors have been on. We do that every month, and definitely, open the doors to folks who may need a place to come and talk and share and create that fellowship.
Okay, and then a couple other things I want to talk about. I'm really interested in letting people know if they need support for air travel, and if they need to somehow take advantage of the apartment down in Seattle, which is a gift, absolutely. I mean, sometimes you're down there for 6 months. I have a friend who's down there for a long stretch.
Right,
yeah,
right.
How does that work? How do you let somebody in Cancer Connection know that you need the help, and then how does the process work?
There are a couple of ways you can do that, and after I do talk about this, I do also want to mention the folks who are being recognized this Sunday,
okay,
if I may. The apartment and the travel reimbursement program, the best way to get a hit of information is, again, to go to our website, look under our resources page. We have a calendar on our website that shows when that apartment is booked. So if you know what the dates are that you need, you can check without even contacting anybody to see if the apartment is free. You can also contact directly the cell phone that our volunteer board members carry, and we can discuss the schedule. There is a single page assistance form that we do ask folks to have completed, signed by their doctor, but we try to make it as easy as possible for people to make use of this resource, both the travel reimbursement financial assistance and the apartment itself as resources in their treatment.
Terrific. And I guess the last thing I want to make absolutely clear here is that this is not something that you purchase. This is something that Cancer Connection provides to you. If you're out at the point where you've got to have some financial assistance in order to get somebody down to Seattle for you or get yourself down to Seattle, it's not totally free. Is that correct?
Well,
the
financial resource through the travel program is a reimbursement program. You have to provide the form and then submit receipts for travel that's already been taken in the course of treatment. Once those receipts are received, we can reimburse up to $750 in a calendar year's time. The apartment itself, we do ask for a very low rate per night, but we also try to work with folks to make arrangements if that is a challenge.
Right. And then this people resource, you said that there is a way that a person who is undergoing a particular kind of cancer can come in contact with another person who might be able to give them
Absolutely.
Some of the signposts along the pathway.
Right. That program called Let's Talk, we work to match recently diagnosed patients with folks who have had a similar diagnosis so that they really can talk the talk with somebody who has been there. And you know, have that freedom to ask questions that they might not otherwise have a resource for.
Cancer Connection, it's an amazing thing. So Cancer Survivors Day, a chance to honor the folks. And who's being honored?
Well, thank you for asking. At the luncheon, every year, Cancer Connection does have four standard recognitions, a Corporate Partner of the Year, which this year is Longaberger Baskets, our Medical Professional of the Year, we will be recognizing Harriet Culver, our Volunteer of the Year, who this year is Tammy Kramer, well-known for the Juno Gun Club, but who's done some volunteer fundraising. And then the Survivor of the Year, who is our city manager, Kim Kiefer. Mm. Then, on occasion, when a very special young person comes to our attention, we do have our Inspirational Youth Award. That's not every year, but there are often young people who face this disease with such grace and such humor that it's an inspiration to all of us. And this year we're going to be recognizing Dorothy Brent of Juno.
Wonderful. Nicole Hollingstad from Cancer Connection, thank you so much. 11 o'clock, Centennial Hall is the gathering.
That's
Walk
right.
Walk downtown, luncheon at the Baranoff.
This Sunday, June 2nd.
The award ceremony on Sunday, June 2nd. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A child arrived just the other day. He came through the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he said, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, son. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. Said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay.
The music is by the DeRocher Family Band. They're playing Friday and Saturday concerts at Glacier View Church of God tonight and at the Chapel of the Lake on Saturday at 7 p.m. Take it in. It's the concerts are free with a Goodwill donation. You're in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO is on K210 AS at 89.9. Pat Moore, been your host today. It's been wonderful bringing you the program. I look forward to doing it again next Friday. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.